this is how I would characterize how you explained your family. Highly educated, sort of highly empowered parents who had big expectations for you. And in one way or another, you were left with a feeling of maybe too much pressure. Is that fair? And also a lot of sort of expectation on their part that you're you and your brother, that you're this sort of multicultural family, and in effect, your very existence is making a kind of statement to the world. Yeah. And that's sort of been a bit of a burden for you, actually. Would that all be accurate?
I'd say so, yes. I'd say so, very much so, yeah.
Okay. So tell me about your, then when you think about all of that, how much does, and you sort of think about who you are to the extent that you do, how much does the fact that you're adopted factor into your sense of your own identity at this point? How much does the fact that you're Chinese and adopted factor into the sense of your own identity at this point? Or are the questions that you're sort of dealing with about your own identity actually, to your mind, not particularly related to either of those things and maybe have to do with other things?
Oh, I would say it's a mixed bag, to be honest. I mean, I think to start off with your first point, in regards to how much I see my identity in, you know, being an adopted individual or being an adoptee, I think it's kind of an everyday kind of experience that it can be emphasized a lot, specifically if someone asks a question in regards to my adoption, and that usually triggers a response in me that kind of indicates that, oh, here we go again. This is the repetitive, you know, redundant question answer session of, well, in most cases, a complete stranger just wanting to, what's the word, gain information or gain access to my life, you know, as an adoptee. And I think that that in itself is very much a real life experience that is constant. And I think that a lot of people who are both adoptees and non-adopted people are very, some people lack the grace and tactfulness to really go about that. And I think that creates a lot of internal turmoil in me, I think, only because it's like, well, this is a reminder that I'm not at all belonging to anything really. And I'm part of just a group of individuals who, in the case of, you know, being around adoptees, like we all share some similar feelings or stories and stuff, but at the end of the day, we're still technically ourselves, like alone, you know? And I think that the idea is that I get so frustrated with the lack of grace that people hold in themselves to be able to conduct themselves in a public fashion. And I think it's because I grew up with the knowledge or, I don't know, information that when you meet someone and you don't know anything about them, best to let them talk about themselves, not have you investigate and dig into their life at the first go, you know. And I think it's like very much imprinted in my brain that if I meet someone and they have some sort of physical or visual or even audible difference, that I don't point that out on them. And that, you know, if I do have that in my mind, that's for me to decide and me to decide on my own in my own world, not for me to project out onto the public, you know, sphere. And if I do find that there's a particular nuance in that person, that I take that into consideration for how I treat them, which is I would treat them as I would want to be treated. Obviously, if I'm having difficulty, I would have to be honest with them and say, excuse me, I'm having difficulty understanding what you're saying. And that's not a point of trying to put them in a corner or whatever, but it's just a point of trying to understand them. Mm-hmm. So I think that with when people ask me, for example, you know, how have you adjusted, or have you adjusted to being an adopted person, or how have you adjusted to being in the United States? And I'm thinking, how do you expect to be adjusted when you really don't have information about 3 or more years of your life And the only information you're getting is from people who took care of you, but they don't really know everything, you know? And observation is observation. It's very, I would say it's subjective, right? I mean, it's just based on people's prior knowledge of life and themselves or whatever. And then they observe something different or peculiar, but there's no real, there's no quantitative sort of, kind of perception or like there, it's not that deep. You know what I mean? Like you can make guesses, you can make inferences, but you can never know what is going on in the mind of an individual who has gone through any kind of experience, whether it's traumatic or non-traumatic, you know, experience is experience. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm going to say is that living as an adoptee, sometimes I do wish I could, you know, mold myself into a person who, doesn't necessarily always have to come out with saying, yes, I'm adopted. And in other cases, I want to be proud of my adoption, but in other cases, I'm like, I get more distraught over it because I'm like, well, there's nothing I can explain, but people want explanation. People want answers.
Right now, do you think it's the right thing to adopt children internationally or children from China, given your interest in trafficking and some of the questions that you've started to have about the process and your own experience? Do you feel like it's something that people should do? Do you feel like it's something that people shouldn't do?
Well, I think, let's see. A direct answer would be I'm on the fence. Mm-hmm. The reason why is that I feel that it's not my job or any other adoptee's job to tell other people what they can and cannot do. It's not, and I do feel that if international adoption could be revitalized and renewed and really examined heavily, I would think that there needs to be stronger rules and stronger guidelines that indicate that this is a serious life decision that you're making as a potential parent to an adoptee and to a child that is, quote unquote, technically a child of the state or country. And I do think that there needs to be more programs and more funding and more, you know, expertise in the idea of that if adoption or international adoption is to continue, that potential parents or guardians should be required to go through a series of essentially life tests that indicate I am ready to commit. I'm not going to just do this for a show. I'm not doing this for, you know, hoopla and whatever and popularity. And, you know, I mean, I know too many adoptive parents right now who are just, look at me. I have my, you know, adoption auction and, you know, I have my, a fundraiser here, there, and everywhere. And, you know, I have 6 kids already, but I want another kid and all that stuff. And I can't pay for this kid's surgeries and medical expenses. Or if the child is not having any kind of medical expenses, that I'm still willing to, you know, ask my neighbor down the street, could you give me $10? You know, stuff like that. And I understand that there's this need or this interest that, you know, on the, you know, religious side, a lot of my adoptive friends are religious and specifically Christians who do believe that, you know, in certain doctrine or, you know, scripture that it's indicated that, well, there's many orphans in the world. So we as a community or as a Christian community need to go out there and serve God, serve the Lord, right? In this idea that there's so many orphans that are helpless and hopeless and they have no future, so to speak, right? And that we as a collective community, world, global community, need to step up and help these, you know, helpless orphans. However, that negates the fact that many of these children who are quote-unquote orphans are not truly orphans. Their parents haven't died, and much less one parent hasn't died, you know, and there's plenty of other guardians within that family that could step up. However, maybe due to financial, due to other issues that are going on, that family is unable to take care of the child, and that's no one's fault, really. I mean, if we want to get really real, it is, I think, the duty of the governments to help out the people, but not in a means of people taking advantage, which, of course, that happens everywhere, people taking advantage of social welfare. But my point being that if adoption is to continue, it needs to be reanalyzed and looked at in a way of, this is a child that you're bringing into your life, and this is not a a shopping trip, so to speak. And this is not a time in which you can just speculate and say, well, if the child has a brown mole on the left side of their cheek, when I thought it was going to be on the right side, well, then that child is not someone I want to have. You know what I'm saying? It comes down to even details of medical issues, which I've read countless times, where parents, and specifically in China, they go to China, they already signed the paperwork, they already accepted the child into their life. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, I'm sorry, this child has a heart disease. I don't feel like I can step up to the plate and pay for the bills, pay for the rehabilitation, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to go head back to America. In this case, there was a family that did that. And I thought, well, my God, you know, this child didn't know that they were going to be adopted for one, or maybe they did, and they knew they were going to be with their forever family, so to speak. And then the parents go and they're like, oh, well, I can't do this. I don't feel I can be up for the challenge, so to speak. But it's like, okay, how's that any different than having a biological child that has a heart disease? Are you going to just say, okay, well, I can't do this? Well, there have been parents who have done that. So this goes down to the, you know, what the ethics, really, down to ethics and morals of what does it really mean to be a true parent, which is, are you willing to really lay your life down for your child, essentially by working hard, finding a different job or whatever, doing whatever you can to make sure that this child has a better life? Or is it all about you, which is, look, now I'm a parent because I have a child, and simple as that, but it's not that simple. So I think as an adoptee, I really feel it there needs to be a really strong message that says, I, as an adoptive parent, am willing to, you know, make certain sacrifices, and there is no question about that, you know? And I think that a lot of parents, they come in with that message saying, I can do anything. I will do anything. I have my friends, I have my family, I have my neighbor who will be able to support me, and the, you know, details and so forth. But then it comes down to the long road of child rearing, which is 18 plus years, or however many years you have the child, starting, you know, whatever age that they are, that you are there to be there for them. And even for some children, their parents have to be there for them at the age of 24 and still be supporting them financially and whatever, right? So I think that it really comes down to commitment. Are you willing to commit? And it's not just a commit just for show. It's a really to commit for life, right?
It sounds like you're saying that there's a kind of sentimentality and a self-indulgence to some of these adoptive parents who you see online, and that if the rubber hits the road and their kids are struggling, in other words, it's not all this big fairy tale, this sort of red thread fairy tale, that it's disappointing to you to feel like there are adoptive parents who just aren't able to cope with the fact that their kids aren't a fairy tale. Their kids are people who have all sorts of issues and challenges, and that there may be some complexity, and the parents need to suck it up and accept that that's part of their decision to adopt and to become parents. Is that fair?
Yes, definitely. And I think it's also even down to educators and, you know, lawmakers and lawyers and judges and everyone involved in adoption. I mean, that's what I've come to know right now, is that in my own adoption specifically, oh boy, there are so many holes that did not ever get filled in. And 18 years later, I found out that, for example, the lawyer that my parents hired, he was the one that worked on my brother's adoption. And that was great. That was a success. I mean, there's that I know of, you know, and he worked on my adoption. And this was before the age of internet, or rather the beginning of internet. So, you know, in order to understand or trust in someone, you're basing this off of really facts, information, and telephone conversations. And I found out not long ago that this guy worked on my adoption. It was successful, obviously. I'm here. But he got in trouble with the law, with a financial problem or whatever, and got put in jail like 2 or 3 years after my adoption. And I'm thinking, holy crap. Like, that in itself makes me feel like this is alarming and very much upsetting to me. Not because he directly hurt me or directly hurt my family or anything like that, because that was that let's put it this way, that case with the financial issues was obviously a case external from myself and my family. But the fact that in itself gave me reason to think, can I trust my parents? Because my parents have kept a lot of things from me, and that made me become the distrusting person that I am today in some ways. Obviously, my adoption in itself has contributed to my distrust in people, and I will take full accountability for that. On the other hand, as an example, my parents had instilled in me that there are two very important people in my life who made my life the way that it is, and then poof, they were gone. And they were gone because of my parents' decision to say, well, we thought that since they moved, we didn't know where they were going to go. Now that we have internet, you could easily research these people. And by strike of luck, really, two strokes of luck, I was able to reconnect with them. However, with one of them, I came to realize, I was like, I don't know if I have a similar feeling about them as they do of me. Because, mind you, this person knew me when I was 1 year old. And then when I came to their life when I was 20, they still saw me as 3.5, 2, or 1, kind of.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that their perception of me was very expectant. Like, they expected a lot from me because it was like they saw me only as a young child. And I don't know if that's their own social faux pas, whatever. But the point is, I think it's cultural too, because they're from the Netherlands and they were living in China. So, and they're married to a Chinese woman and they have a Chinese Dutch child, right? And the point that I'm making with that individual was they have had a lot of connection with other adoptees. I mean, a lot of them. And I was one of the first to have had any connection with him because of my surgeries. He funded or helped fund my surgery so that I could have surgeries in China by a Chinese American doctor. And I come to find out, you know, news about my my living in the orphanage and the quality of care that I was given, which, let's put it this way, crap, awful, you know, it's more or less abusive in a lot of ways. And I had asked him about that, and it took him 1 year to come to terms and say, yeah, you had been, you know, beat up and hit and, you know, isolated and all that stuff and tied to chairs and stuff like that as a quote unquote means to potty training. However, there was other, I think, ramifications with me being tied to a chair. But now I know why I have scars on my hips. Because originally I thought it was because I had my diapers on too long, you know, and there was just constant, friction or whatever because I'm wearing diapers. But no, it was because I was tied to a chair. That makes more sense to me. I'm like, wow. So the point that I'm making is that there's such a angst, I guess, that I feel that I don't want other adoptive parents to continue with their children, which is lying about anything that this child has experienced in their adoption process. Obviously, there's some things that are hard to hear, like abuse, right? That's not something that people talk lightheartedly about. And certain connections or whatnot, or certain pieces of information. Obviously, to an adoptee, I think most adoptees would say that, well, the ones I've met, some of them say, oh, I don't care to know about my past. I don't want to know anything. But a part of me thinks that in itself is a means of saying, well, I don't want to know because I haven't been allowed to know, meaning I haven't been given permission to be able to ask certain questions, much less feel comfortable. And it's not as if a lot of these adoptive parents are saying you are not allowed to ask questions. However, by their way of treatment to the child, it's already indicating that the child is only allowed to certain limits, certain ways of asking questions, certain ways of interacting with people. That in itself is cultural too. It's cultural, whether it's in the United States or in the Netherlands or in England or wherever, you know. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's just concerning to me how many adoptees I know of who are literally in the dark about stuff and they feel utterly depressed about stuff. And then I'm like, well, if I didn't know a lot of stuff that other people know about me, well, no shit, I'd be depressed. It's like people know something about you and it's all secretive and like hush hush and like, oh gosh, you know, detail after detail. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, people are whispering around me and I'm just standing here like, okay, I'm supposed to go on with my life normally. Thank you, people. You know what I'm saying? And I think I just met an adoptee online who was adopted in the Philippines and she, from the Philippines, and she, she's in her late 20s. And she was adopted into Spain, and now she lives in Germany. But the point is that she right now she's learning about her adoption at 20 something years old. I'm like, oh my gosh. And she was the only Filipina, or well, Filipina in her school in Spain. And it's just like, yeah, she may have looked similar to some of the people there, but in the end, she was bullied and all that stuff, you know, drama, and, you know, difficult situations here and there. But she came to realize, well, now she fully understands why she felt such a loneliness. She didn't have siblings either. So the thing is, to have her reach out to me and say, look, I found your video through one of the groups that we're part of about your search and stuff, and I want to search for my biological family in the Philippines, you know, I thought that's pretty awe-inspiring in that sense, where someone out of the blue comes and contacts you. But at the same time, it's like, well, look, we have an affinity here, no matter what global borders tie us, you know. And that's what I want other adoptees to know, is that, you know, though we may have different stories and different people in our lives and different hurts or, you know, triumphs, all that stuff, I mean, in the end, many of us have this desire or interest to not only find our biological roots wherever they may be, but know that we have some sort of identity within something or somewhere, you know? And I think even within the Chinese communities that I've been involved with, I mean, sometimes I felt pretty much involved and included, and other times I'm like, wow, people could give two shits if I was here or not, you know? And I think a lot of people would say, well, it's just cultural. I mean, they just don't know what to do. I'm like, yeah, it's called having a little bit of heart, but, you know, some people just don't have heart the same way, and that's just not something you and I can ever, you know, control or whatever, manage. But I think that that in itself, with the governments being involved in the social, I call it, it's definitely having to do with social welfare and social, it's a social makeup, right? It's reconditioning the society, right? And being able to have this exchange, which is international adoption in this case. I wish there wasn't so many secrets. I wish that the secrets weren't just, obviously it's one thing that, I don't know. Secrets are bad because there's just a sense of power with secrets. And that's what I think, I've learned in my reading about adoption and, social situations, is that when you have secrets, or anyone has secrets, that means you have power to be able to judge, because you already know something other people don't.